Hello, everyone. The online Indian Journal of Peace and Conflict Resolution is delighted to host another episode of the Indian Conflict Resolution podcast. The aim of the podcast is to consult experts and conduct dialogues on building peace and resolving interstate conflicts, especially in the context of South Asia. Today, I'm extremely delighted to host our honorable guest, Lieutenant General Dr. Shaukeen Chauhan, PVSM, ADSM, YSM, SM, VSM. General Chauhan is the former Director General, Assam Rifles. Post-retirement, he assumed the coveted appointment as the chairman of the Ceasefire Monitoring Group, Northeastern Nagaland. The general is an alumni of NDA, National Defense College, the Army War College, and the prestigious NDC. He holds a PhD degree from Punjab University, Chandigarh, has served in both the Ministry of Defense and the Ministry of Home Affairs. He's also the former defense attaché in the Indian Embassy in Nepal. The general is skilled in counterterrorism operations, border guarding operations, peacekeeping, intelligence analysis, and currently is a visiting fellow at the Center for Land Warfare Studies, an Indian Army think tank in New Delhi. A very warm welcome, General Chauhan, and thank you for being in conversation with us on the topic India-Nepal Relations, Peace Cooperation Pathways.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be a part of the show.
You know, to begin with, India-Nepal relations, as you know, we've had civilizational ties which are rooted in geographical proximity. The two countries shared an open international border of approximately 1,860 kilometers. Nepal sharing five Indian states, borders with five Indian states. A testament to the strength of their bilateral relationship, in fact, is peace-to-peace connect, which perhaps is the deepest share by any two countries in the region. Keeping that in premise, why is Nepal important for India, if I may start with that, giving the prelude of our civilization connect?
Speaking on Nepal is a particular favorite, subject of mine, because I've actually been in Nepal so often. Not only was I the Indian Defense Advisor, I also have served and commanded Gurkha troops. And in fact, the first language I learned before I learned Hindi was actually Nepali.
Oh, lovely. Okay.
In his book, The Revenge of Geography, I wonder if you all read it. Robert Kaplan actually starts the book by saying, "A good place to understand the present and ask questions about the future is to travel as slowly as possible." So, when we look at Nepal and India, we have to look at a couple of issues. We have to look firstly at the unique relationship that we have with Nepal. We have to look at the geostrategic importance of Nepal to India, which justifies the significance of the Nepal-India 1950 treaty,
Right.
in which the first Prime Minister, Prime Minister Nehru, reiterated India's perspective of the magnificent frontier of the Himalayas, which I will quote because it's important to why Nepal is important to us. He said, "Now, so far as the Himalayas are concerned, they lie on the other side of Nepal, mostly not on this side. The principal barrier to India lies on the other side of Nepal. And therefore, we cannot permit people to cross over or inimical forces to cross over that barrier, which would otherwise weaken our frontier." What does this really mean for India? When you start looking at the strategic geography of Nepal, because it's very important when you talk in terms of relationships like this to see where they are actually located for us,
Right.
you realize that Nepal actually lies along the mountains of the central portion of the Himalayas. Let me just sort of clarify this to you. As the
Right.
land slopes downward from the Himalayan wall in the north, it comes down towards the fertile Terai plains of the Ganga in the
Gender.
south.
Correct.
That means Nepal sits on what is known as India's heartland, the Indo-Gangetic Plain. Now, because Nepal is on the Indo-Gangetic Plain, and that is India's greatest vulnerability, we talk of the Siliguri corridor being a vulnerability. There is no greater vulnerability than the fact that Nepal is on our head in our heartland. And between Nepal and India, there are no natural barriers.
Right. That's an
And
open
because
international
there are
border.
no ba natural barriers, the only barrier to us is actually the Himalayas. And Nepal lies between Tibet in India, and Tibet, as you know, is a part of China. And because of the relations that exist between India and China, any kind of Chinese movement, any kind of Chinese forces that come through the Kodari Highway onto Kathmandu actually make India very, very vulnerable.
Right.
And that's why it's so important that we ensure that Nepal stays at least within our security framework.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay.
I couldn't have agreed more with you. We talk about this intra-community connect and bond, and you mentioned the Gurkhas. What is the extent of the significance of these cultural ties when it comes to bilateral relations between the two countries?
Just let's break down this name Nepal.
Right.
Ne is a Hindu sage, very old, ancient, venerable Hindu sage. His name was Ne, who
Okay.
established himself in the valley of Kathmandu. And the country's name Nepal originates from the name of the sage, along with the Sanskrit word Pala, which means the place protected.
Oh, that's interesting.
Therefore, Nepal is an area protected by the sage Ne.
All right.
It is this venerated sage who performed a number of religious ceremonies at the Tekud, which is the confluence of the Bhagmati and Vishnumurti rivers, which actually made the people or people at that time give him much greater reverence. And according to many legends, and I have studied a lot of books, he selected a pious cowherd to be among the first of the many kings of the Gopala dynasty. Gopala obviously knows is a cowherd dynasty, the rulers of which had ruled that country over 600 years, with Yakshagupta being the last king of the dynasty. Similarly, another Hindu saint, Guru Gorakhnath, his name is taken for the term Gorkha or Gorkhali. So both Nepal and the Gorkhas who inhabit Nepal are synonymous with Hindu saints. So there can be no greater connect than the fact that obviously it is the people of India as it expanded, a large number of people who expanded towards the north and the west, and moved towards Nepal in the mountains. So the people who live in Nepal, less the people who live in the upper Himalayas. Now, again, I come down to geography, because geography is very important. Nepal has very three distinct terrain features. I'll start from the south of Nepal, the southern Nepal. Southern Nepal is the Tarai. The four districts of the Tarai, taken from eastern UP and eastern Bihar, which were given to Nepal by the British post the 1957 war of independence. So the first part of Nepal, which links Nepal to India, is actually the Tarai. 49 to 51% of the people of Nepal, the overall population of Nepal, are actually the people from the Tarai. And from the Tarai, as you went up, the second important geographical feature were the Middle Himalayas or the Middle Hills.
Right.
Between the Middle Hills and the Tarai, or between the Tarai and the Middle Hills, about 300 to 400 years ago, it used to be a very, very dense jungle, which used to be called the Char Kose Jhad, the Jhadi. And it was a malarial curtain. Nobody could cross this jungle without being infected by malaria and dying by it. And therefore,
Oh.
Nepal remained largely cut from the rest of India because of this Char Kose Jhadi.
Okay.
So, because there was this gap between the Madhesis and the people who lived in the Middle Himalayas or the Middle Hills, the Gurkhas. Western Gurkhas had the Magars, the Gurung, the Puns, and Eastern Gurkhas had the Rais and the Limbus. Both of them had their own dynasties over many, many hundreds of years. And as you go further from the Middle Hills, you go to the higher Himalayas. There were people of maybe, I'm saying maybe Tibetan origin. At least the origin was similar. The lamas, the tamangs, or the porters who now take people to the Everest, these were the people, the Sherpas, who inhabit the upper Himalayas. That is, as they are linked to Tibet. So the population in the upper Himalayas is very sparse, very, very little. And they don't generally get themselves involved in political issues with in the Nepali in Nepal itself. It is the Middle Hill people, the Gurkhas, the Puns, the Magars, the Rais, the Limbus, who actually dominate the framework, the political framework of Nepal. And in the Middle Hills, the center of Middle Hills is the Valley of Kathmandu. And then finally you come down to the Tarai, though the people might have a greater population, but because of the way the districts have been broken down, they do not have political power.
So, taking on from your argument, the Nepalese diaspora, I was reading somewhere, approximately 6 million of them live in India, whereas the Indian community run about 600,000 are living or domiciled in Nepal, and these include businessmen, traders who have been living in Nepal for a long time, professionals, doctors, IT personnel, even laborers, which include the seasonal migratory construction sector workers. In 1990, there was an Indian Citizen Association of Nepal was formed on 14th September. So I just wanted to know your inputs as to, is this the only association of resident Indian citizens in Nepal with its branches in Pokhara, Dhamaka, and Bhairava, or and do these association, do they help in providing a platform for discussion on matters pertaining to legitimate interest of resident Indians in Nepal? And do they actually end up working for protecting protection of their interest? And perhaps the current status of the ICA, if I may put it that way.
Jyoti, here's where we go wrong. 51% of Nepal's population are from the Tarai, who have a roti beti rishta with the rest of India. And there is a lot of movement which we don't even know about, which people cross and go, they marry, they take their wives from here, they take their husbands from Nepal, their food habits are the same, their language is the same, they speak Bhojpuri. So there can't be a bigger connect than the people of the Tarai. So that's where we go wrong. We don't need these 600,000 laborers or people working in Kathmandu. When actually Nepal is a part of our own life.
I think
Right?
that's very important
And the
point that you
second
made.
thing, Jyoti, is that there are 128,000 Nepal domiciled Indian Army soldiers who are pensioners of India.
Okay.
128,000.
That's quite an amount.
Yeah, and
Yes.
we pay an equivalent of 4,000 crores in Nepal yearly. Almost 20% of the foreign direct investment of Nepal is actually paid by India through pension, through as pensions to the pensioners living in Nepal.
Right. That's a very
If
interesting.
you, yeah, if you multiply this by six or seven of the family, the normal family size of a Nepalese
Nepalese,
family living in the Middle Hills, you
correct,
have
correct.
something like 10, 15 lakh people who
No,
have
that's
directly, who directly get everything from India.
correct.
So
I
the
agree.
first thing I want to say is that we should never get insecure about Nepal,
Right.
because Nepal is us,
Right.
our
Right.
hearts, our thought processes, everything is similar.
So, leading on
But
to,
yeah,
sorry.
but the issue is, Jyoti, that
Yes.
I also explained to you that there is a political disconnect. Why? The people of the Madhes, who actually are 51% of Nepal,
Right.
do not have political power. There is
Okay.
no Madhesi party
Right.
which has political power in their democracy, because they were divided into separate districts, so that the power has always remained in the Middle Hills.
Right.
Secondly,
Understood. Yeah. Thank you.
yeah, please go ahead.
Secondly.
Secondly, the issue is that if you take history,
Right.
there were about 200 odd families which gained directly from the what the king, the erstwhile king of Nepal, gave them. They were the Darbaris of the Shah dynasty. So they gained money, they gained the lands, they gained the economic wealth, they gained the contracts, and they became rich.
Right,
They
but
also drive the political direction.
okay.
So that's how it is, Jyoti.
Understood. But if we, it's been more than 70 years of friendly bilateral ties, and like you said, Nepal is
3,000 years, 3,000 years.
yeah, okay, 3,000 years, correct.
Yeah.
But this should have resulted in a strong interstate infrastructure connectivity. Supported by easier movement and multiple joint mechanisms. Why is there a gap in the infrastructure projects? Because such infrastructure connect could actually allow cultural and physical exchange of people, and we could perhaps grow even more symbiotic than what we are. So there is this disconnect between why our projects which we have started in Nepal, they're not accomplished timely.
Okay, I'd once again request my listeners to look at the map of Nepal.
Right.
When I went to the defense advisor, the foreign the ambassador was Mr. Shyam Saran, who used to tell the people of Nepal that you're not India locked, you're India open. All roads come to India. Everything of Nepal has to flow through India.
Correct.
Because the land, as I explained to you, because that's why I wanted to talk of geography first,
Geography,
the
correct.
lay of the land is, it goes southward. And because there are no major obstacles, all access has to be from India. There is only one road, Jyoti,
Right.
which comes from Tibet, that is the
Right.
Kodari Highway, which is
Right.
about 100 kilometers from Kathmandu.
Okay.
But that road, as it's built, and because I've gone on it many times, Jyoti, and this is my personal experience,
Ji.
it is a Class 18 road. That means it is a two-way road which cannot take heavy traffic. Even if you
Oh, I
make
see.
it Class 24
Okay.
or Class 60 to take four lanes,
Right.
It is still the that one road is the one that is affected the maximum
Okay.
during the earthquakes that Nepal faces.
All right.
Because it
That's
has to
interesting.
come from the hills. The
True.
hills themselves are fragile, and Nepal is a country sitting in a very major seismic flaw. All
Right.
the rivers of Nepal flow downward into India.
Right.
So Nepal is India open. There is nothing else in Nepal but
Right.
infrastructure from here. But now
Right.
you say, why is this issue about infrastructure? You know, Jyoti, what I found, and I have been through, like I said, from the east to the west, south to the north, I have been in every part of Nepal before I went there as a DA and after I was there as a DA, because I used to also pay pension to my soldiers. And
Right.
my soldiers were spread all over. On the Ganga, the river that causes the greatest problems during the monsoon months, is the Kosi, right? Kosi is known as the river of sorrow. And it
Right.
always floods Bihar. Bihar and East UP always floods. This comes from Nepal itself. In the 1950s, we started the process of building dams there or headworks. But those headworks are full of silt now. And because they're full of silt, they're not effective anymore. So we are not able to control the flow of the Kosi River or the other rivers during the monsoon, and therefore that floods the Indo-Gangetic Plain. But have you ever tried to build anything in Eastern UP or Eastern Bihar? Because if the states of Bihar and UP are given the contract to build something in Nepal, and they've been given the contract over the many, many years, they've never done anything good. So the first issue is, Jyoti, that we had a head start on everybody for 30, 40 years.
Right.
From 47, when we gained independence, Nepal was India open. They had no other, they were not looking northward. But our roads, our infrastructure, our headworks, nothing we built sustained or lasted. And because it didn't last, there's a lot of derision among the people in Kathmandu or the Middle Hills that whatever India does, it doesn't do it well. If you go to the Nepal Foreign Ministry on in there, as you enter there, Shashi Bhavan, you find, a saying there that they're quoting their first king, Prithvi Narayan Shah, who says, Nepal is a yam between two boulders. Seeing the size of the country and seeing the size of its population, it's actually between the kingdom of the south, that is India, and the kingdom of the north, that is China. And if Nepal has to survive, she can only survive by being equidistant to both.
Right. Very well said, in fact. Janjahan, that was really very illuminating. And, I'm sure our listeners would have gathered a lot from your insights. For those listening, please do visit our website at oijpcr.org for more information on what we do. You can write for us or send us your feedback and thoughts. Thank you for joining us today. We look forward to hosting another episode next month.